Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
Guess what, Will?
What's that, Mango?
I've been trying to write a promo for our podcast, Part-Time Genius, but even though we've done over 250 episodes, we don't really talk about murders or cults.
I mean, we did just cover the Illuminati of cheese, so I feel like that makes us pretty edgy. We also solve mysteries like how Chinese is your Chinese food and how do dollar stores make money? And then, of course, can you game a dog show?
So what you're saying is everyone should be listening.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Justin Rutherford, doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover to hide behind.
Detective Weaver said, "I'm sure you know why we're here." I was like, "What in the world is going on?"
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think that it created a model at the time that, as far as I know, didn't exist previously, and we didn't know if it would really work. And so now, more than 20 years later, we can see that it was successful.
For many years, my offices were at the Starrett-Lehigh building on the west side of Manhattan on 26th Street. My windows looked down on the growing park along the Hudson River. In 2012, I joined the board of Hudson River Park Friends to help them in their mission of caring for and expanding the great green space along the Hudson River. The park is doing so many things to beautify and improve the shoreline. Joining me today are Connie Fishman, the executive director of Hudson River Park Friends, and Carrie Roble, the vice president, estuary and education for the Hudson River Park Trust. They're going to talk about how the park has grown and all of the resources it offers. Welcome to my podcast, both of you, Connie and Carrie. The park stretches from 59th Street on the west side of Manhattan all the way down to Battery Park. And I have driven that road, the West Side Highway, for so many years. I hate to tell you, but recently for the last 21 years from Bedford, New York. So I drive all the way down, almost both to 26th Street. And I have watched so much transformation. And then being a member of your board, Connie, I have witnessed even more transformation. It is incredible what a small group of people can do to a very vast piece of property if they are right-minded. So talk about the expansion and the improvement of the West Side, maybe even a little bit of the history, because people don't know what we're talking about when we say Hudson River Park. Oh, there's a park there? You know, it's kind of a strange, fabulous place.
Yes, thank you so much for having us here today. We love talking about Hudson River Park. It's our favorite subject. The Hudson River itself is a little over 300 miles, going all the way from the Adirondacks down to the Battery in New York Harbor. And the Hudson River Park is the last 4 miles. So from 59th Street down to Battery Park City. It used to be all maritime industry and shipping piers. Before that, before industrialization, it was mostly transportation for goods on smaller ships and for people coming to New York. And until about the 1970s, the predominant uses were shipping and industry. And then the shipping technology changed, and the kind of piers and land that were available for the new shipping containerization just didn't exist on the west side of Manhattan.
The ships were way too big to come up the Hudson River.
The ships were too big. The cargo was something they used to call break bulk instead of containers. When they containerized it, there was no place for the trucks and the huge empty fields of container storage, and it moved to New Jersey. And that left the waterfront down on this part of Manhattan basically empty.
Empty and deteriorating.
Yes, and without private businesses occupying the piers, there was nobody taking care of it.
And yet, prime real estate, so beautiful. When you see what some companies have been able to do, like Google, taking Pier 57, taking that and turning that into a corporate headquarters jutting out into the Hudson River, it is quite an astonishing sight and an astonishing place. So talk about that. I mean, the piers, first of all, they deteriorated a lot, didn't they?
Yeah.
The old piers.
They did. They were made of wood. And ironically, as the water got cleaner, they deteriorated faster.
Oh, how come?
Because the water cleanliness encouraged more marine life, including something called shipworms. And they bite into the wood and they eat little holes in it. And ultimately, the piles fail and the piers fall down.
So those piers jutted out how far? What was the longest pier?
I think the longest pier was close to 1,000 feet out into the water.
And how wide is the Hudson River at its widest here in New York?
Probably close to over a quarter mile.
Yeah, it looks like to me farther than when you walk across the Brooklyn Bridge, which is about 3/4 of a mile. And it's definitely its widest down here near the harbor.
And the piers were made out of the piles. They're called piles, aren't they? Pilings that are driven down into the floor of the river?
Yes, they
are. That hold the superstructure of the pier. Those were made out of what kind of wood?
I don't actually know. I think a lot of them were probably pine because it's cheap and easy to find. They were all built probably more than 100 years ago, and then rebuilt again because there were many fires over the years.
Oh.
The piers would burn down, the pier sheds would burn down, then they would get replaced. And finally, when we started working on it, we rebuilt them in concrete because there's really just no way to maintain a wooden pier like that anymore.
So you drove pilings of and filled them with concrete?
Mm-hmm.
That's probably better for the river, too.
I don't know if it's better for the river, but not having to work in the river as often is certainly better for the creatures
right.
that are in the river.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And concrete is a hard material that a lot of these encrusting organisms like to settle on and grow off of.
Yeah.
So we see a lot of wildlife on these concrete piles.
But like snails and mussels and things like that, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
And since I've been on the board, the reports of the wildlife that is inhabiting the river is so encouraging. It's so nice to know that the river is clean enough now to allow for this kind of habitation.
And improving all the time.
Yes.
Some of the work that Carrie is doing at the park specifically targets certain kinds of animals so that even more of them are coming all the time.
Yeah.
We have over 85 species of fish that we've documented using this section of the Hudson River. And our habitat enhancement projects are building corridors and habitat for these fish to find protection in and to feed off of. So in the last 3 years, we've installed over 35 million oysters. And that's just part of this effort to help improve the water quality, but also the habitat for the wide range of fish that call the park home.
Now, that said, would you eat a fish from the west side of Manhattan?
So our partners at Department of Health advise that women who are of childbearing age should not eat fish. Unfortunately, we're still dealing with the impacts of these historical pollutants. So from the time that Connie was referencing, there's so much industry on the river. And before the Clean Water Act, there weren't regulations regulating point sources or companies dumping into our waterways. So we're still dealing with the impacts of PCBs or polychlorinated biphenyls, and those accumulate in fish tissues and should not be eaten by young people or people that want to have babies.
Right. Well, that's good to clarify. But Connie, you represent, or the two of you represent two specific entities, the Hudson River Park Trust and the Friends of the Hudson River Park. Why are two different organizations required to manage this park, which is independent of New York State, New York City, and it is totally reliant on contribution for maintenance and rebuilding?
It's a complicated structure. It comes from a strange history of the property before the park existed belonging two-thirds to the state of New York and one-third to the city of New York. And they eventually agreed on legislation called the Hudson River Park Act. And that created the Hudson River Park Trust to build, operate, and maintain the park. And the Friends was formed at the same time to raise private funds to be their philanthropic partner. So the trust has within it the properties like Google, which you referenced at Pier 57. It also has Chelsea Piers up at 17th and 18th Streets and the Circle Line up in Midtown, and then some smaller concessions up and down for food and beverages. And those create income that goes directly to the park. And then the Friends raises private money and grants philanthropically to add to that. But the board of the trust is actually controlled 50-50 by the governor and the mayor. And it's a complete partnership. Unless they agree on something, it doesn't happen. So essentially everything that has been built, designed, and opened since it started back in 1998 is 100% unanimously agreed to by both the city and the state. But the trust itself and the Friends are independently run and not part of the city or state operating departments.
Well, at 4 miles in length, the park itself is one of the largest parks in New York. How does it compare in size, really, to Central Park?
It's the second largest park in Manhattan.
Oh, it is.
And
after Central Park.
After Central Park. And so it's 150 acres of land, in this case, really piers and upland, and 400 acres of a protected estuarine sanctuary, because the river itself is part of not just the Hudson River Estuary, but the Hudson River Park.
I see.
Yeah, so the river is such an important space for migrating fish and for wildlife in general as they're moving up and down state. We see a really exciting monarch butterfly migration come through the park each September. But that estuary is this important piece of our mission that influences our programming. We have this river project department that teaches field trips and public programs so people can learn about the river, be community scientists, and get their hands wet. And then also it influences our operations. So when we actually do construction, is influenced by, for instance, the overwintering of striped bass. We are thoughtful of these wildlife rhythms and are always responding to it to ensure the health and protection of this estuarine sanctuary.
Well, how many projects have been built in the park since its inception?
I believe there are now 16 new public park piers. And a park pier is one that is primarily open space, plantings, sunbathing, recreation, sports, things really for all of the communities that are next door to us and for the city as a whole.
Well, I have an apartment on Charles Street, so right on the river, and it is so much fun to look out at the view late in the afternoon, because on that particular pier is a lot of grass, and there are yoga classes, dancing classes, strollers, dog walkers, bicycle riders, people pushing baby carriages, of course. It is so active, that park. And it's so much fun to see how many people are enjoying. How many people a day do you think stroll or use the park?
I don't know a day, but the most recent count that we had, and it's quite difficult because at 4 miles you have so many places that people can come in and out, but our best guess was that annually we have 17 million visits a year. Now, that's not unique visitors, because somebody with a dog might be there four times a day.
Right.
but it is a very, very busy place with lots and lots to do. And one of the things that we did when we were designing the park is to meet with each of the neighborhoods to figure out what they felt was missing in their community and put those things into their section of the park.
So how many playgrounds for children are there now along the park?
There are four open and one which will be open in the spring. One is at 57th Street, one is at 23rd Street, one is at Jane Street, one is at Pier 26 at North Moore, and another at Pier 25 right next door.
And they're really fabulous, fabulous playgrounds if any of you have a chance to visit. It's so much fun. And, you know, parallel to this beautiful park is the High Line for part of the park. And that has been just a boon to New Yorkers because they have a nice elevated park to stroll and visit and see. I'm looking at it right now. We're at the Samsung headquarters here in the West Village, and it's so much fun to look at that beautiful, beautiful High Line. But that park started way, that park did start a little bit before the Hudson River Park, didn't it?
I think it started a little bit after.
Oh, after?
But they were successful in becoming 100% complete faster than we were.
Yeah. Well, you're much bigger.
We're much bigger. And also they have only one parent, which is the city of New York. And so the city got to decide the pace of the money that went into building it. Whereas we have two parents, and sometimes they have different size pocketbooks.
Always the problem. Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
Guess what, Mango?
What's that, Will?
So iHeart is giving us a whole minute to promote our podcast, Part-Time Genius.
I know. That's why I spent my whole week composing a haiku for the occasion. It's about my emotional journey in podcasting over the last 7 years, and it's called Earthquake House.
Mango, I'm going to cut you off right there. Why don't we just tell people about our show instead?
Yeah, that's a better idea. So every week on Part-Time Genius, we feed our curiosity by answering the world's most important questions. Things like, when did America start dialing 911? Is William Shatner's best acting work in Esperanto? Also, what happened to Esperanto?
Plus, we cover questions like, how Chinese is your Chinese food? How do dollar stores stay in business? And of course, is there an Illuminati of cheese?
There absolutely is, and we are risking our lives by talking about it. But if you love mind-blowing facts, incredible history, and really bad jokes, make your brains happy and tune in to Part-Time Genius.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Some of you listeners may recognize the Hudson River because of the Miracle on the Hudson. Describe how big this river really is and how it flows.
One of the interesting things about the Hudson River is down here, it's part of the estuary. We're right near the harbor, and so it's tidal. And I think the tide keeps changing all the way up until a little past Poughkeepsie. So the farther north you go, the more fresh water is in it. But in our section, every 6 hours, there's a change in tide, and it's a significant change. And so it is really noticeable, and a very high tide looks totally different in the park than a very low tide. It's also a home to ferry boats and cargo boats and the sanitation and water quality boats that are up and down. So it's a really busy river
down
here.
And pleasure boats.
And pleasure boats, things like the Circle Line and the World Yachts and the Statue of Liberty ferries.
And now a lot of sports boats. And there are all kinds of, there are kayaks, canoes, jet skis, water skiers. I saw a water skier the other day.
That I haven't seen.
Oh, yeah. Water skier. Oh, that's up the river. But boy, it is really getting more and more and more used, I think.
It is very busy. We have, I think it's 4 boathouses for human-powered boating. So kayaks, canoes, Hawaiian outriggers. There is a group that builds what are called Whitehall gigs, which is like the boat that George Washington crossed the Delaware in. Oh. So there is so much activity in the water.
So the newest initiative is the Science Playground. Why was sturgeon suggested for the theme of that beautiful, beautiful playground?
I think sturgeon, it's a fish that, of course, is native to the Hudson River. And then it's such an interesting fish. They're a prehistoric fish. They were around the time that the dinosaurs were here. And they're really large, yet because of human impacts, their population significantly declined. We would fish them for their caviar, their eggs. And there's been a lot of effort to help to restore their population because we have to think about the entirety of the lower Hudson estuary. They come in from the ocean, and this is their spawning ground.
I see.
And so we put the sturgeon, 2 different types of sturgeon there, because I think it just evoke so much curiosity. People can't believe that they are in the Hudson. And then we were able to play on a lot of their different elements like barbels and scutes, and students can climb on them and swing from them and actually go inside them, pretend like they're a crab that was just eaten by a sturgeon, and literally slide through their digestive tract. Mm. So it allowed us to build a Hudson River environment on land and through play, learn a lot about local wildlife.
Who designed the park? Was there one landscape designer or one scientist who actually sort of like conceived of the look and feel of this beautiful place?
There are 4, actually now 5 main design teams that worked on the park, in part because when we started building, there were very few large landscape architecture firms located in New York. There just wasn't that much open space development or open space.
After Olmsted and Central Park.
That's right. And so this was an opportunity for a lot of smaller firms to work together. And what we did was we had a master planning team that helped design the elements that run through the park from start to finish, like the paving on the esplanade and the railing at the water and the light poles. And we wanted people to feel like they understood they were in the same place as they moved from neighborhood to neighborhood. But then separately, there was a landscape architect team led by Sasaki Associates and Matthews Nielsen down in Tribeca. There was a team in Greenwich Village led by Abel Bainson Butts. There was a team at Gansport, which just opened last year, which was the James Corner Field Operations team. There was a Chelsea team of Michael Van Valkenburg and Associates. And then there was an architect who led the team up in the north where there are many more buildings, and that was Richard Dattner. And it took many years for all of them to finish and get their sections built. But finally, we are almost 100% done, which is, for me, a huge achievement.
It really is. It's amazing. And the Hudson River Park also has a very robust group of tenants, the tenants that live on or near the park. How does that help the park?
The income from the tenants is the primary income that supports the operations and maintenance of the park.
That's the big parking garage?
The big parking garage at Pier 40, which fits probably about 1,500 to 2,000 cars.
My daughter keeps her car in there and walks 20 blocks to get there and climbs up to the fourth floor.
It's very Manhattan.
It is very Manhattan. But it's a safe, lovely place to keep a car.
It's safe. It just was rehabilitated a couple of years ago. Yeah. All those 3,000 piles needed to be fixed to keep it standing. But one of the unique things about the arrangement for creating the trust was, unlike most New York City parks, we get to keep the income that's generated within the park itself. And that is what keeps the lights on and the pavers fixed and the piles repaired and all of the kind of maintenance that you don't really see. You just see a beautiful park.
How many piers actually jut out into the river now?
The total, besides the 16 that are the park piers, there are, I believe, four piers that are part of Chelsea Piers. Then there are three up at Circle Line. There's one in the north for Con Ed. There's one at the Intrepid. So altogether, it's probably close to about 25.
Mm-hmm. So 25 out of the probably hundreds when the river was the bustling port that it was.
Absolutely. I think there, at one point, not only was there a pier at the end of every street, but on both sides of it, there were pier sheds and ships in the water. And back in those days, you couldn't see the water. It was completely blocked by the commerce that was going on.
How unusual is it for a park to have such a mix of commercial entities and parkland?
I think it was an experiment in New York when we first started. I wouldn't be surprised if it's happening more and more across the country, because this issue of the deindustrialized waterfront is not unique to New York. And many older cities in particular who were built on rivers have the same issue. And they're all dealing with, how do you make it nice for people to come to the water? How do you make it a recreational access and bringing more nature into urban areas, but also then how do you support it?
How do you compete with the East River here in New York with the Tin Building and those places, or is it a complementary kind of sharing of ideas?
I think it's really complementary. We speak to our peer groups from other parks all the time. We're actually part of a group called the Parks and Open Space Partners in New York that formed during the pandemic when we all were struggling with figuring out how to raise money. And it's probably got 40 or more organizations in it now, and we all work with each other to give advice, to find out how some of them have succeeded when others haven't, and really share the brain power of the people who are working in these places.
Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
Guess what, Mango?
What's that, Will?
So iHeart is giving us a whole minute to promote our podcast, Part-Time Genius.
I know. That's why I spent my whole week composing a haiku for the occasion. It's about my emotional journey in podcasting over the last 7 years, and it's called Earthquake House.
Mango, I'm going to cut you off right there. Why don't we just tell people about our show instead?
Yeah, that's a better idea. So every week on Part-Time Genius, we feed our curiosity by answering the world's most important questions. Things like, when did America start dialing 911? Is William Shatner's best acting work in Esperanto? Also, what happened to Esperanto?
Plus, we cover questions like, how Chinese is your Chinese food? How do dollar stores stay in business? And of course, is there an Illuminati of cheese?
There absolutely is, and we are risking our lives by talking about it. But if you love mind-blowing facts, incredible history, and really bad jokes, make your brains happy and tune in to Part-Time Genius.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Carrie, you're so knowledgeable about the wildlife on this great estuary. Is that right to call the river an estuary?
Yes, of course it is.
So who's really responsible for all the science that's going on and the research?
Yeah, so our river project team, we're now a team of 9 individuals. We have science staff as well as environmental educators. They're translating our research to programs that are then being taught to students and families and just the general public. But our science team thoughtfully partners with local universities, so scientists throughout New York City can do research in the park, and we facilitate that through a visiting scholars program. We've been building a partnership with CUNY, so the City of New York University, to help local scientists and faculty at those universities bring their research and their students into the park. With the designated estuarine sanctuary, we have this management plan that has goals around conservation and restoration, and really to conduct research on water quality, on wildlife, on climate impacts. We need to do that collectively and with many hands. Mm-hmm. So with that plan, it guides us and our partners in building a really rich roster of research so that we're looking at the river over time comprehensively.
Yeah. It's so much fun to talk to people who are involved with some of your programs, and I've met quite a few of them. And they're so excited. They're so excited about not only educating the youth of New York City, but also just all of us, the inhabitants here, because we should know what's going on in our river. What about the little park? How did that happen?
Little Island.
Yeah. I call it Little Park, but it's a little island that was built by Barry Diller and his wife, Diane von Furstenberg, I guess, and with the English architect who designed that park jutting out just south of the Google Pier.
So the project at Little Island was completely unique to what all of the rest of Hudson River Park had been doing up to that point. And I think in part it was triggered by the fact that at that moment, it was probably a few years after the financial crisis. And so there was a slowdown in construction of the park. And one of the designated park piers that hadn't been built was the pier at 14th Street. And that just happened to be sort of across the street and a block over to where Barry Diller's office was at the IAC building.
Right.
And so he looked at this every day, and I was probably aware that the building had sort of come to a standstill at that point because there was no private money and there was no public money. And they started discussing with the former president of the trust and the former board chair also what could be done with that space in the meantime since it wasn't being built by the public sector. And he hired Thomas Heatherwick, and they dreamed up what at the time seemed like this totally insane design. And it was really unlike anything else, not just in our park, but anywhere.
It's like a little hilly park jutting out into the jutting up out of the Hudson River.
Yes, it's sitting on, I don't know, I've forgotten the number of, we refer to them as like flower pots because that's right. What they look like. They're sort of tulips. But those got floated down the Hudson, and when they started to install them, just it attracted so much attention.
Oh, it did. Yeah.
It's really wild. And the landscape architecture there was Matthews Nielsen, who also did our Tribeca section. And it's just so interesting.
And everything seems to be thriving out there in the river.
And they were so careful to make sure that every season of the year had something blooming. So the spring, the summer, the fall, the winter, they all look very different, but they're all beautiful.
So for those of you coming into New York City from out of town, it's certainly worth a visit to see Little Park.
Absolutely. Every time we have visitors, it used to be they wanted to see the High Line. That was first, and now they want to see Little Island.
So the plantings along the park are quite beautiful. There's so many trees and so many plants. Who takes care of these, all of this, and who plants all of this?
Sure. Well, we have an amazing horticulture team. So that team's led up by Matt Post, and they're out there rain or shine in 90-degree weather and below 30-degree weather to take care of all of these plants. As Connie was just saying about Little Island, we're really thoughtful about having plants that are blooming at different points of the year, to have cedars and hemlocks and supporting some of the deciduous trees. So there's habitat and food also for all of the different birds and insects that inhabit the park.
Do but visitors respect the plantings like they should?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, good. Certainly.
Yeah, I sometimes worried when I saw something so beautiful that somebody was going to come and dig it up in the middle of the night, but they're respectful.
They are, and they see the hard work, I think, yeah, of our horticulture team as well as our volunteers. So our friends group leads a huge volunteer arm, and we work with community volunteers, we work with corporate groups to help us to keep the park looking beautiful, and that takes many hours. So groups are removing plants that shouldn't be there, so invasive plants that like Phragmites or mugwort, and they're helping us to plant the flowers, the bulbs, the trees and shrubs that we all appreciate.
What's the biggest success of the park, would you say, Connie?
The biggest success in the park. That's hard for me because I love it all.
Yeah.
But I think that it created a model at the time that, as far as I know, didn't exist previously for how you could do this and not be dependent on the support of the budgets of the city and state parks, because not only are they stretched very thin all the time, but in really bad times, it means you're not dependent on them and you can allocate your own resources in a way to keep it clean, to keep it safe, to keep it beautiful. And I think before we started, that was just an idea, and we didn't know if it would really work. And so now, more than 20 years later, we can see that it was successful. And the people who live across from us on the west side in all those different neighborhoods, they can see it too.
Now, with the building of Hudson Yards, which is a gigantic real estate development, how did that affect the park, or didn't it?
On the Friends side, it certainly has affected the park. It means that we have thousands of neighbors where we didn't before. And our volunteer program that Carrie was just referencing now has more than 3,000 volunteers a year. And I think probably at least a dozen at most, maybe 20 new businesses that are occupants of Hudson Yards.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, and very supportive.
Yeah, Hudson Yards was once the railroad yards of New York City, and all the railroad, that's where all the trains ended up and took off from, and it's now transformed into this most amazing modernistic city of itself.
It really is, yeah, incredible. That area, in fact, right across from where your office is where we have the last Hudson River float bridge, which brought the goods over on barges from New Jersey, oh, and then put them on rails that eventually wound up on the High Line. So there's just so much history in the sites that are across the street from the park and in the park itself.
Well, I'm so excited to see the continued progress of the park. I just want you to describe the gala, which I attend every year, and it's so much fun. And what are you doing this year with this gala?
This year is still in the planning stage. We're currently working with one of our park tenants for one of our honorees. I'm not going to divulge that yet because it hasn't been publicizing, but looking for our other one. And one of the things I love about our gala is that it is so full of friends and neighbors from, you know, all the communities.
That's what's really nice about it. It really is a friendly gathering of how many people? Like,
it used to be almost 1,000.
Yeah.
It's gotten smaller since COVID because there used to be like no room to get up from your table.
Yeah,
but it's now still about 750.
Oh, I know. It's so many people and everybody talking to everybody.
It's like a giant block party.
It is. and it does bring the neighborhood totally together. And last year you raised quite a bit of money.
We did. I think we raised nearly $3 million. And then we just had our second biggest event last Friday, which is our playground committee luncheon.
Oh, yes.
So those two are our biggest events, but they're also, it's just amazing to see people come to something like that, not because their company sent them, like as a chore, and definitely not a rubber chicken dinner.
No, because they're neighbors.
They are. They're neighbors and they love the park.
And they love the park and they use the park, which is the nicest thing.
They probably use it more than I do.
What can one do in the Hudson River Park?
Well, there are so many things to do in Hudson River Park. You can jog, you can cycle, you can play tennis, you can use the skate parks, you can go to the playgrounds, you can play soccer, baseball, football, and almost any other field sport.
And I know you can do yoga, and I know you can exercise, and I know you can dance. I've seen dancing classes.
You can listen to music. We have jazz. We have Afro-Caribbean. We have Bollywood and Bhangra. You can bring your dog to our amazing dog parks, which is so important for New Yorkers with their tiny apartments. You can take a cruise ship. You can learn about World War II at the Intrepid Museum. You can go to a fine dining restaurant. You can go to a place like City Winery and listen to music. You can go to the rooftop park at the top of the Google Pier. You can visit a place like Little Island with your out-of-town friends.
I am getting tired.
Or you can just walk and look at the beautiful nature.
And you can walk 4 miles down and 4 miles back and get all your cardio in a day.
That's right. And if you run the perimeter of each and every pier, you can add another 3 miles to that.
Wow.
And I'll just add, you can also see some of these Hudson River fish up close in the park's wet lab. We have a flow-through aquarium at Pier 40. It's one of a kind, and you can actually see striped bass, oyster toadfish, oysters growing, and learn a lot about our local wildlife there.
And what street is that pier?
That's at Houston Street.
At Houston Street, Pier 40.
Pier 40,
and
yes.
You can go to the Discovery Tank.
Yes, and then up at Pier 57, which is that building that we were talking about with Google, we have a Discovery Tank. It's a gallery and a classroom. There's interactive games. You can dive deep into the Hudson and learn about what's growing in and around our piles. You can spend a day as a oyster toadfish in a game, a tabletop game, or build plankton and learn about the role that plankton play in helping to keep our river healthy.
So you see, there's plenty to do in the Hudson River Park. I hope all New Yorkers and all visitors to New York will take advantage of it. Follow at Hudson River Park to see their events and programs. Thank you, Connie, so very much for taking time out of your busy, busy day. And Carrie, thank you. It's really nice to talk to both of you and to learn more about one of New York's finest, finest attractions.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Martha.
Thank you. Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
Guess what, Will?
What's that, Mango?
I've been trying to write a promo for our podcast, Part-Time Genius, but even though we've done over 250 episodes, we don't really talk about murders or cults.
I mean, we did just cover the Illuminati of cheese, so I feel like that makes us pretty edgy. We also solve mysteries like how Chinese is your Chinese food and how do dollar stores make money? And then, of course, can you game a dog show?
So what you're saying is everyone should be listening.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Justin Rutherford. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover to hide behind.
Detective Weaver said, "I'm sure you know why we're here." I was like, "What in the world is going on?"
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.